Hare Krishna. This is a very interesting part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Genealogical table of daughter of Manu. It's about the creation but spoken from a different perspective. So that is what the title of this talk is. Family of Dharma. Canto 4, Chapter 1, Text Number 49 to 52. Pitrabhya ekam yuktebhyo bhava aikyam bhavachide shraddha maitri daya shantis tushti pushti kriyonitaha buddhir meda titiksharir murtir dharmasya patneya shraddha suta shubham maitri prasadham abhayam daya shantihi sukam mudham tushtihi smayam pushtir ashyuta yogam kriyonatair darpam arham buddhir Ashuyata Medha Smritim Titikshatu Kshemam Ri Prashayam Sutam Murtihi Sarva Gunopatir Nara Narayana Rishi. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One of the remaining two daughters was given in charity to the Pitrulok, where she resides very amicably. And the other was given to Lord Shiva, who is the deliverer of sinful persons from material entanglement. The name of the 13 daughters of Daksha who were given to Dharma are Shraddha, Maitri, Daya, Shanti, Tushti, Pushti, Kriya, Unnati, Buddhi, Medha, Titiksha, Ri and Murti. These 13 daughters produced the following sons. Shraddha gave birth to Shubha. Maitri produced Prasad. Daya gave birth to Abhay. Shanti gave birth to Sukha. Tushti gave birth to Mudha. Pushti gave birth to Smaya. Kriya gave birth to Yoga. Unnati gave birth to Darpa. Buddhi gave birth to Artha. Medha gave birth to Smriti. Titiksha gave birth to Kshema and Ri gave birth to Prashraya. Murti, a reservoir of all respectable qualities, gave birth to Sri Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'll read one purport. Text number 56 verse. The demigod said, "Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Transcendental Personality of Godhead, who created His external energy, this cosmic manifestation, which is situated in Him as the air and clouds are situated in space, and who has now appeared in the form of Nar Narayan Rishi in the house of Dharma." Purport. The universal form of the Lord is the cosmic manifestation, which is an exhibition of the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In space, there are innumerable varieties of planets and also the air. And in the air, there are variously colored clouds. And sometimes we see airplanes running from one place to another. Thus, the entire cosmic manifestation is full of variety. But actually, that variety is a manifestation of the external energy of the Supreme Lord. And that energy is situated in Him. Now, the Lord Himself, after manifesting His energy, appeared within the creation of His energy, which is simultaneously one with Him, one and different from Him. And therefore the demigods offered their respects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who manifests Himself in such varieties. There are some philosophers called non-dualists, who because of their impersonal conception, think that varieties are false. In this verse it is specifically stated, Yoma Yaya Virachitam. This indicates that the varieties are manifestation of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, because of the energy is non-different from the Godhead, the varieties are also factual. The material varieties may be temporary, but they are not false. They are reflection of the spiritual varieties. Here the word pratichakshnaya, there are varieties, announces the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as Nar Narayan Rishi, and who is the origin of all varieties of material nature. Hare Krishna. So, it's a very interesting part, as I said, in the Bhagavatam. and Prabhupada defines here diversity, variety. Unfortunately, many times we consider diversity to be very confusing. There we try to make it as simple as possible. But making something which is not natural is imposing on it. Just like even if you want to make rice, you know, when we offer rice to Krishna, but the background in actually making that rice, cooked rice, has got so much of background. And even one step also fails, so many factors are involved, even one step fails there, then you don't get that rice on your plate. Even if the best of the rice, the basmati rice, right, to make that basmati rice, it's a very complex process. But if someone is very negligent to cook, hoping that, oh, I've got the best of the rice, therefore it is very easy, I don't have to give that much of attention. And if we half cook it, then we cannot eat it. Why? Because it did not become correct. Just one rice, one item. And we don't eat only rice. We need dal. Then if you are from South India, then you need pickle also. You know, if you are from Maharashtra, you need some kind of chili powder also. And if you are from Russia, then you take out all the spices and eat plain. Even eating rice, there is so much of variety. Right? So therefore, similarly, as Prabhupada explains in Upadeshamrit, bhakti, he says, is not sentimental speculation nor imaginative ecstasy. When we assume things that it is very easy, yes, it is easy, but it is not lazy. Easy, sometimes taken as, you know, I don't need to put that efforts. Prabhupada hasn't made it very easy. Certainly he's made it easy, but that doesn't mean that we become complacent in practicing devotional service. It's a process, it's a journey. So therefore here in this chapter, we see the table of family of Daksha Prajapati. Daksha Prajapati is a progenitor. The whole concept of creation is spoken from a very different perspective. Every qualities are taken as living entities. They are not simply gunas. The qualities are not, when we say determination, you know, nothing comes to our mind in regards to personalities. What comes to our mind is certain kind of emotions. Determination means we fold our hands, you know, because determination denotes some kind of conviction. When we think about patience, right, we think about staying, you know, waiting for the thing to happen. When we think about humility, right, naturally our head bows down, or we think that humility means to bow down. But here, Bhagavatam gives a different perspective of these qualities. These qualities are personalities. Therefore, as Prabhupada explains, everything is chinmoy. Everything is actually a personality. They have emotions, they have feeling. And therefore, Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when he talks about qualities, utsahad nishchayad dhairyad. Now very interesting, these qualities, when they are not connected to Krishna or Dharma, they can't stand alone. Determination without Dharma can become very stubborn. Because material world has a flip side also. In Sanskrit it is called as hat. So determination without, in connection to Dharma, becomes very strongly stubborn. Similarly, patience without enthusiasm is pure laziness, tamogun. And enthusiasm without patience is passion. No, it's like a fire in the frying pan. How long does it stay? When we come to Krishna consciousness, that initial enthusiasm makes us, like they say, you know, back in India, that if somebody is doing azan, You should know loudly if he is doing, that means he is a newly appointed mullah. Why? Because he has great enthusiasm. So therefore, no qualities can stand alone. In one place, Prabhupada explains humility. What is humility if it is not connected to Krishna? Humility could be cowardice also. Right. When you find somebody attacking some devotees or somebody else, it is a responsibility of a person who is watching that attack, not telling them the philosophy, you should tolerate. When somebody is going through injustice, to tell them you should tolerate, it is another injustice. Right, why? Because humility can be exploited. So nothing in this world, if you see, can independently be good. It is the flip side in the Rama, in the Mahabharata. Arjun, when he was discussing with his brother Yudhishthira Maharaj was not willing to take over the kingdom. He was hesitant. He was always a reluctant leader. So Yudhishthira was saying that, you know, what is this? I created this war, so many people got killed. He said, I don't want to rule. Then Arjun told his brother, he said, my dear brother, wherever you go, whichever part of the world you go, and whatever you do, it is never only good. Every good has a disadvantage, and every disadvantage has an opportunity. Wherever you go, you'll always find something opposite. Same thing, Sanjay told this to Dhritarashtra. You know, he was trying to make everything good for his children at the cost of his nephews. He told my dear brother, he said, you go wherever in this world, you'll encounter five kinds of people. Or the same person will give five kinds of experiences. One, he said, there will be people who will love you. And there will be people who will hate you. And there will be people who will be indifferent to you. They'll walk by you. They don't say you to Haribol also. I remember one devotee, you know, he had a headache, one of our senior temple president. He had come from some program and he was coming back to his room, you know, he was having severe headache. And one family, they greeted him. But because he was so, you know, worried about his headache, he could not greet back. So this family, when they went home, they thought, okay, we have offended this devotee, you know, we have offended him, we don't know why he did not respond to us. So that became an issue in the house. And they sent a message to him, Prabhuji, did we offend you? He said, you didn't offend me, I offended myself. No, I had a severe headache. So indifference is also there. And fourth, he said, there will be people in this world who will help you. And there will be some people, you know, whom you will help. He said, this will happen with few different kinds of people, or the same person will give you different kind of experiences. Even in relationship we see, same person, you know, they can give you different kinds of experiences. This is part of existence, my dear Dhritarashtra, my dear brother. Wherever you go, you'll encounter this. Right, so therefore, here Bhagavatam so beautifully explains when these 13 daughters of Daksha Prajapati, they got married to Dharma. What is Dharma? As Prabhupada explains in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, Dharma is not exactly, yes, certainly in the introduction we explained there are certain terminology, they cannot be exactly translated. It is not easy to translate them as it is. And especially the word dharma is most difficult to translate. Because dharma is very complex but not confusing. You can help people to experience it, but it is very difficult to give explanation. So if you want to say simply what dharma is basically integral good. Integral good means that when you are pursuing Krishna consciousness, it is not at the cost of your living. No, I remember in our ashram, there was one devotee, very enthusiastic. So he considered that resting is Maya. When you are young and enthusiastic in devotional service, even to fulfill the basic necessities of human existence, again, as Prabhupada explains, sentimental speculation leads this. That sleeping is a Maya, eating is Maya. Minimize all these things and increase your Krishna consciousness. But doesn't happen like that. Raghunath Das Goswami did not impose buttermilk on himself. The buttermilk came to him on its own because he was so elevated. Right. So therefore, we see that the whole concept of dharma means integral growth. From Anna to Ananda, in the Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, there is a concept of Panchakosh. Annamay Kosh, Pranamay Kosh, Manomay Kosh, Vigyanmay Kosh and Anandmay Kosh. And to see Krishna in Annamay Kosh also is progress in life. Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamayi Pashyati. Krishna explains, one who can see me in everything and everything in me, he is never lost to me and I am never lost to him. Such a beautiful concept. If somebody can do that, that is slowly, gradually progressing to experiencing Krishna in everything, everywhere. And as we grow higher, as our love increases, then we are focused on the personality of Krishna. Therefore, the gopis, they were told by Uddhav. He said, Krishna is everywhere. That is for us to understand. For gopis, they said, look Uddhav, you don't tell us this. We are here to become members of Krishna's family. We want to be the members of Krishna's family. We are not interested in this philosophy. But without going through this and directly when we try to say, I belong to Krishna and Krishna belongs to me, that can lead to narrow-mindedness. Therefore, Rupa Goswami, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Kapil Muni explains three kinds of bhakti. When I read first time, I said, my God, I didn't know about this. Bhakti in the mode of goodness, bhakti in the mode of passion, and bhakti in the mode of ignorance. And bhakti in the mode of ignorance is what? It's all about, I am the best devotee. It's exclusivist. In that, Kapil Muni explains to Mother Devuti, one who has bhakti in mode of ignorance, he is a separatist. He is violent. When he wants to present his opinion, he has to put everybody under, below him. And Daksha Prajapati represents that. He was so violent, he thought his devotional service is the best, procreation is the best, and Narad Muni is an obstacle. Shiva is an obstacle. So that is bhakti in the mode of ignorance, which is violent, offensive, and thinking superior. And bhakti in the mode of passion is very competitive. Right. So there is always More than actually experiencing Krishna, it is experiencing numbers. Right. Even chanting, more than how I chant, it becomes how many rounds I chant. How much money I give. How early I get up. If somebody is getting up at 3:15, and somebody gets up at 3:45, he considers he is less than me. One devotee was telling me, very senior, he said there was one young devotee, you know, these were senior 50-year-old devotees, young devotee was staying, and they would get up little late because the body had become worn out and old, and he would get up early. And when you would see them sleep, he would feel that, you know, what is this? They are sleeping. And he would chant loudly. You know, he would make sound to wake them up. He couldn't wake them directly, but because they were senior, but he wanted to disturb them and wake them up. And eventually walked away thinking that all insincere people. So that is in the mode of passion. And mode of goodness is a bhakti where there is cooperation. And beyond that, Kapil Muni explains, beyond these three gunas, there is bhakti which is beyond any guna. So what we are supposed to practice devotional service in, not in sattvaguna, not in rajoguna, not in tamoguna, but because we are in this material world, more than transcending these three gunas, we are affected by these gunas. Right. So therefore, we see our Bhagavatam explains that when every quality is connected to that integral growth, dharma, then that creates auspiciousness. So that is the dharma tree. We will try to go through this. This one. So this creation in the fourth canto, Brahmaji is the secondary creator empowered by Krishna. And Manu and Satarupa. Manu is the Manvantara avatar, previous Manu. Swayambhuva Manu had two sons and three daughters. Two sons were Uttanupad and our Priyavrat Maharaj. And he had three daughters. And three daughters are basically Akutu, Devuti and Prasuti. And those three daughters were married to Kardama Muni. And Akuti was married to, we'll go, Akuti was married to Prajapati Ruchi, and from there Yajna and Dakshina was born. They were Lakshmi and Narayan. And then these are their children. And Dharma, you can see, Dharma was married to all these 13 daughters of Daksha Prajapati. When Dharma married to Shraddha, if you study, Prabhupada explains about Shraddha, faith can be changed based upon different experiences. We see, if you ask any atheist or normal theist who has not have the background of philosophical concept, they will say, I believe in God because I had this experience. Based upon their experiences, they will say something is good or bad. Same thing when people come to the temple also. If they come to the temple and they are fortunate enough, if somebody greets them, they'll go and tell the whole world, "Arey, they are very nice people." Their minimal experiences gives rise to this understanding, they are good. And the same thing, if somebody comes and nobody greets them, they go and tell the whole world they are very bad people. So minimal experiences gives rise to understanding that this is good or bad. Why? Because Shraddha is based upon experience. Therefore, Prabhupada explains, Shraddha can be, the faith or belief can be changed. You can become this, you can become that. Now people can change their gender also, right? So, but here Shraddha, when she is married to Dharma, that gives rise to Shubha. And we can see, basically, unfortunately in this world, faith has caused unlimited violence. There is no doubt about it. When people debate, did religion cause violence? We can argue, no, religion does not cause violence. No, religion does cause violence. It's a reality. One has to accept it. And when religion causes violence, it is not on the physical level also. Religion causes violence on the emotional level, intellectual level, on a social level, on the relationship level also. I remember when I was recently in one college, one of the IIT college in Bombay, and somebody came and told me, you know, you should read this book called as Spotlight. A movie also came. The abuse in the Catholic Church in America. And he said, you are from a spiritual organization, you have children also, you have people who come to your spiritual practice, and you should see what has gone through. And in that book, because I also deal with school children, what I read was, these children, some of them grown up, they said, these people did take care of us, they gave us love, but compared to abuse, you know, the love was very minimal. Love did help us, but the abuse traumatized us. So therefore, faith is very delicate. When it is misused, if it is exploited, one cannot come out of it. Therefore, faith without dharma is very inauspicious, but faith with dharma creates very auspiciousness. And therefore, Prabhupada explains faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. Shraddha means Shrat Asyam Dhyata Iti Shraddha. Conviction born of determined intellect. Intelligence is closely connected to the heart, therefore gratitude is a quality of buddhi. In the Bhagavatam first canto, if you read in regards to Parikshit Maharaj's birth, very interesting, Parikshit Maharaj had unlimited gratitude. But how that gratitude came about? Gratitude is very closely connected to buddhi. Again in the third canto also Kapil Muni explains to Mother Devahuti that the characteristics of buddhi is sleep. If you sleep nicely, that means you are buddhiman. Now, one of the characteristics. Another characteristic of buddhi is gratitude. Why gratitude? Because collecting information is not buddhi. That Google does for you now. But actually collecting something what people did good to you many years back, that is buddhi. Therefore, krita means action and kritajnyata means to remember something which was done to you many years back. That is kritajnyata. Right? So therefore, it is very closely connected to heart. Shraddha is not an emotional outburst. Shraddha has a logic. Shraddha has a reason. And what is the reason and logic? The Shraddha says, when we have that Shraddha which is connected to Krishna, that it is beyond reason and logic. It goes beyond it. Again, here Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, and in ignorance. And we know what happens with faith in ignorance, in goodness, in passion. The word Shraddha in the Bhagavatam, when Lord Narsingdev, after killing Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad offers his beautiful prayers. First the Devatas offer their prayers, then Prahlad offers his prayer, after Prahlad offers his prayers. Lord Narsingdev accepts his prayers, asks him to ask for some benediction. Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, Krishna, how can you ask me to ask benediction? If I ask benediction from you, then it is simply a business deal. And apparently, Prahlad Maharaj chastises Lord Narsingdev for asking him to ask benediction. We chastise Krishna for not giving benediction. So he said, my dear Lord, I am a servant, you are my master, there is no other relationship between us. If you give me something, you are pampering me. And I ask something from you, that is demand. So better maintain this relationship between you and me. Lord Narsingdev said, no, you have to ask something from me. Then Prahlad offered something. Prahlad said to the Lord, he said, my dear Narsingdev, please deliver my father. Now the deliverance of his father is not Prahlad's compassion, rather it is gratitude. Because you can't be compassionate to your superior people. You cannot be compassionate to your father. Now what was Prahlad's consciousness? Prahlad's consciousness, after all, he is my father. At one time, Prahlad Maharaj, when he came from his school, if you read the Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu had the affection towards his son. He smelled his head and he cried tears. You don't see Prahlad being compassionate to superior. So Shraddha, the word Shraddha, it comes in the Bhagavatam. Then when Lord Narsingdev gave beautiful practical instruction to Prahlad, he said, my dear Prahlad, you know what, you have this body. This body is what? It denotes that there is papa and punya. Bhogena punyam, kushalana papam, kalevaram kala javena hitvam. He said, my dear Prahlad, you have this body. As long as there is papa and punya, this body will be there. This body is not only made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. That is external. But what is the reality? The reality is this body is made of papa and punya. Everybody has their quota. You have to enjoy your punya and you have to exhaust your papa. So while doing that, you always remember me. You keep me in your heart. And he said, you take over the kingdom. Rule it properly. Do not go against the Vedas. And then Lord Narsingdev told Prahlad Maharaj, said, my dear Prahlad, your father has been touched by me. I have touched him. He has been completely purified. But still, you should perform Shraddha ceremony to your father. Very interesting. That after being touched by Lord Narsingdev telling Prahlad Maharaj that I have touched your father, therefore he is purified, but still you should perform Shraddha ceremony. And what is Shraddha? Shraddha is nothing but Shraddha with gratitude to your superiors. Jai Radha Gokulanand ki. Said Shraddha is a gratitude to your superiors, your ancestors, because of them you have got a human form of life. And because you have the human form of life, you came in touch with a pure devotee of Lord. Certainly, he is the most responsible. Prabhupada is the most responsible for making you a devotee. But because you have the human form of life, expressing that gratitude, we know devotee has no obligation, but doesn't mean that there is no obligation, means we don't have to be grateful to someone who did something to us. That cannot be erased. So Lord Narsingdev told this to Prahlad, even though Hiranyakashipu did not contribute anything good in Prahlad's life, but still Prahlad thought in one sense, that is my father. And therefore immediately asked, can you do something about my father? So that is the Shraddha. And I was recently talking to one very great scholar, very humble person, scholar and humility is quite contradictory. So he explained to me, he was a great Pandit. He said, you know what? In Shraddha, Shraddha is universal. Gratitude is an universal principle. When you don't follow, you become less than a human being. And he gave an example of elephants. He said, when an elephant dies, the elephant always travel in herd. If one of the elephant dies, the other elephants, they come together and they give burial. They bring wood, they bring soil, they cover the body. And that entire day they do fasting. He said, doesn't stop here. These elephants, they come to the same spot next year. They travel so much, but they come back to the same spot. On the same day, they don't have the calendar, either the English calendar or the Panchang. They come back to the same spot to remember one of their members. That is called a Shraddha. You don't need a philosophy, you need a heart. Right. So therefore, how could someone not do that? Another story of Draupadi. You know, Draupadi, basically it is explained, the Vaishnava Acharyas explain, the heart of Mahabharata is Draupadi Sharanagati. Yes, there is a lot of war, Bhishma's greatness, Arjuna's greatness, Dronacharya's skill to teach his students, you know. But the heart of Mahabharata is Draupadi Sharanagati. And what kind of Sharanagati? That she surrendered to Krishna, but not at the cost of relinquishing her other relationships. She became exclusively surrendered to Krishna, knowing very well at that point nobody could protect her. Bhishma could not do anything, Dronacharya could not do anything, Dhritarashtra did not do anything, five Pandavas, such powerful personalities, they could not do anything to Draupadi. It was very traumatic condition. You are abused verbally, you are abused visually, you are abused physically. And this whole story of Draupadi Vastra Haran, Bilomangal Thakur explains that Draupadi was abused by Dharma and Adharma coming together. Dharma represented by Bhishma, Drona and all the Pandavas. And what was their point? Their point was, Bhishma, they was thinking, I am subservient to Dhritarashtra. Therefore, I can't break my Dharma. Dronacharya was thinking, I am subservient to Dhritarashtra. I can't do anything. Yudhishthira Maharaj thinking, I am defeated. Therefore, my dharma is the dharma of the defeated person. I cannot retaliate. It is against dharma. And Bhima was thinking, he was angry, he was upset. He was biting his tongue, he was biting his teeth, he was having a tight fist, he wanted to kill all of them. But still he was bound by his own created dharma that I am subordinate to my brother. Everybody had their own dharma, but they forgot the most important dharma. What is it? That Draupadi does not belong to us, she belongs to Krishna. They continued to think that she is our relative. She was, but more than that, she was Sakhi of Krishna. And nobody protected her. Therefore, bad and good together, that is the worst thing to happen. The bad is abusing you, you can understand. But good is supporting the bad in the name of dharma, that is the worst kind of crime. And Draupadi went through that. And therefore, when she called for Krishna with great devotion, she did not reject all other relationship. She was angry, she was upset. So when Krishna came to see the Pandavas in the forest, it's a very painful definition, that whole episode if you read in the Mahabharata. Krishna comes, Arjuna is crying, weeping, Yudhishthira, you know, he embraces Krishna, and Krishna offers obeisances to the Pandavas. Then Krishna inquires, what happened? Then they explain what happened. And then when Krishna meets Draupadi, it's a beautiful episode. Draupadi starts crying. And she tells Krishna, Krishna, just see my condition. He said, I have got 5 husbands. And they had their Gandiv, they had their mace, they had their dharma. Nakul and Sahadeva, such a beautiful people. But nobody came to my rescue. Hell with their Gandiv above, hell with their mace. And all his husbands had guts to say anything to Draupadi. They were keeping quiet. Arjuna attacked Yudhishthira Maharaj when Yudhishthira Maharaj told, hell with your Gandiv above, afterwards. But when Draupadi said, he said nothing. And then Draupadi did not stop there. She told Krishna, I said, my dear Krishna, at least you should have come and protected me. She said, for 4 reasons you should have protected me. One is, I am a woman. I am a abala. I am helpless. Therefore you should have come and protected me. Second, I am not ordinary. I am born from the fire. I did not come in anybody's womb. You should have protected for that reason. And third, I was a queen. You should have protected me. And the fourth most important reason is that I am your servant, I am your Sakhi, and you are the Lord of the entire creation. For this reason, you should have come and protected me. And what does Krishna say? Now, this is the beauty, how bhakti is so sensitive. Krishna could have given her philosophy. You idiot, you don't understand how material world functions. Material world is full of misery. There is birth, old age, disease and death. This is part of life. You are suffering your own karma. Krishna could have told her that. He didn't say that. Krishna could have said, you should remember who gave you the sari. I was the one who gave you everything. And you're still ungrateful to me. Krishna did not say that. Why? Because her emotions were so much hurt. That will not benefit Draupadi by saying what is the reality. To say the reality, if it is not benefiting, better not to speak that reality. And Krishna told Draupadi, I am sorry, I was fighting a battle elsewhere. That is responsible love. Krishna is very responsible. So if we see here faith, this faith is not blind. This faith is very sensitive. And then Krishna said, I am sorry. And then he took a vow. He said, Draupadi, I take a vow. What is that vow? He said, the mountains may become powdered. The Himalayas may come down. The oceans may stop. The rivers may stop flowing. The elements may stop functioning. But Vasudev Krishna, he takes a vow for you that within stipulated time, I'll bring all these evil forces down for causing this pain to you. So Krishna did not give philosophy to Draupadi, Krishna gave assurance to Draupadi, and Draupadi starts crying more than what she cried. And why she cries now? She cries because she wanted to offer something to Krishna, but she had nothing to offer. Srila Vyasadeva writes, Draupadi offered the tears from her eyes, and that became Archana. Nothing was there. She offered tears from her eyes, and Krishna was very satisfied. So therefore we see in that lamentation also, there is so much of wisdom. And responding to that lamentation, Krishna is so sensitive, he is also very responsible in his response to Draupadi. Therefore, faith without proper reason and logic can be abused. We have seen it in many religious situations. And the next quality is Maitri. You know, friendship without dharma can be abused. Therefore, in the mundane world, Chanakya Pandit explains, in the Mahabharata also explains, that friendship should always be amongst the equals. Because if you make friendship with the superior person, because he has the powerful position, he can use you as your servant. And if you are very powerful, but very stupid, the other party may be simple and strategic, he can exploit you by taking your resources. So therefore, if this friendship is an equality, and Mahabharata explains that if you are a real friend, you should know the difficulties of your friends and offer without the asking. And to other party it says, if you know that you are a real friend, and if a friend is rich and you are poor, don't ask anything from him because you lose his friendship. Those who have, they have to give without being asked. And those who don't have, they should not ask anything. But it is very difficult to follow. Just like when I was reading in one place, the Mahabharata only, we always quote this. As sadhus, we tell grahasthas. You know what the Shastra says, what Prabhupada said? He said, you should not eat anything unless you invite people. You have to stand outside your home and call out, anybody is hungry, anybody is hungry, anybody hungry. And nobody comes and you should consume. That is one side of the instruction. In the same place, Mahabharata tells this story, but it also explains for the beggars, for the sadhus. The sadhus are told, when the grahastha calls you for food, don't go there. That is their credibility to call, but it is your credibility not to go unless everything is exhausted in their home. You should only go when leftover is there, because you are a beggar. So there is a rule for beggars and there is a rule for givers also. But we only talk about what is benefiting to us. We only talk about our rights rather than our responsibilities. So here friendship, Mahabharata explains, Maitri means satisfy, to protect, to give that experience of heartfelt offering. And there are five kinds of friendship: by nature, friendship by truth, by material wealth, and influence of others. Somebody is dominating, we say, I know him, I know him. We don't realize whether he knows us or not. So then, prasannata, that Maitri, when it is connected to dharma, it gives rise to prasad. Prasad is what? Pleasing experience, prasannata. Gita explains, but a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principle of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So prasad is not only the food. Prasad is also experience of satisfaction. Prasannata. You know, we become very gladdened. We become very satisfied when we practice properly. And here we see Duryodhana and Karna, their friendship. People glorify their friendship. There are books written in India glorifying the friendship of Karna and Duryodhana. Now, how bad it is for Krishna to tempt Karna for breaking his friendship with Duryodhana. When Krishna came and told Karna, he said, you know what, you are a brother of Pandavas. Karna said, I know that very well. And Krishna said, you should fight on behalf of dharma. Karna said, no, I can't do that. Because Duryodhana has done so much for me. He didn't realize that Duryodhana had purchased him. But he called it as a friendship. And such friendship, because it was not connected to Dharma, Duryodhan got destroyed and Karna also got destroyed. Similarly, another story is there between Dronacharya and Drupad. The entire Mahabharata battle in one sense caused because of Dronacharya's problem. Dronacharya, in one sense, Dronacharya was a friend with Drupad in his childhood days. And Drupad, out of childhood friendliness, he told, you know what, I am a king. You are an ordinary Brahman. When I become, you come to my kingdom, I will give half of the kingdom to you. Friends tell so many things when they are small children. And if somebody takes it seriously, that is their problem. When Dronacharya took it very seriously because he couldn't afford to give a milk to his son, Ashwatthama, right, he would take some wheat flour and mix it in the water and give it as a milk to Ashwatthama. That was the poverty he was experiencing. Therefore, it is always said, once upon a time there lived a poor Brahman. If Brahman is wealthy, there is a problem. He has to live poorly so that he can help others. So then he came to his friend, hoping that my friend will give. And he told, you know what, I'm your friend. I've come here. So Drupad told, hey, look, you're my friend. That was in my childhood days. You're not my equal. I'm a king, you're a beggar. If you want my friendship, that is not possible. I can give you a few cows. Take this charity and go away. Drupad insulted Drona. And Drona became so offended. To develop friendship with Drupad, Dronacharya came and trained the Pandavas. And what Guru Dakshini asked? You don't ask Guru Dakshina. Usually student gives Guru Dakshina. But here Drona specifically asked Guru Dakshina from the Pandavas and the Kurus that he should go and capture Drona and bring him, you know, alive. And Arjuna did that. And that was the reason Drupad said, I will take revenge against the Kurukul because they are responsible. And I will take revenge against Dronacharya. I will have a son who will be so powerful who will kill Dronacharya. But he was so fascinated by Arjun. He developed this hatred and fascination to Arjun. I said, I will get a daughter who will marry Arjun. So in one sense, Draupadi was responsible for the death of the entire Kurukul. And Drishtadyumna was responsible for the death of Drupad. That is the power of wrong friendship. Dharma was not there and just see what it happened. Same thing with marriage also. The marriage mantras, they talk about marriage is a friendship between husband and wife. They are called as Satidar. Now they are together. So if the marriage takes place amongst the wrong people, that has the power to destroy the entire, you know, creation. Like historically, one of the great kings of India, Prithviraj Chauhan. Now he married one girl called Sayukta, a daughter of another king. You know, he kidnapped. He thought he's also Krishna, no, like Rukmini. And because of that marriage, the marriage took place, but the father of Sayukta became so angry and upset that he hurt my ego. He invited the invaders from outside India. Mahmud Ghori came and he destroyed. That was the beginning of invasion. It all happened with the wrong marriage. Therefore, 1 + 1 is not always 2. 1 + 1, like one fire, one spark of the fire, when it falls on the, you know, cotton, what does it do? It can destroy. Therefore, 1 + 1 is always not 2. So therefore, this friendship we see, Sudama and Krishna, that was so beautiful friendship between them. The Gopas, why? Because Krishna was there, Dharma was there. And third, Dharma and Daya. Daya is called as Karuna and Anukampa. Compassion, four things are there. Three things. Anukampa. Anukampa means when you see somebody suffering, then you tremble. That is the first stage. You should feel something. And second, Karuna and Daya. Karuna means basically you try to remove their problem. And Daya is not only remove their problem, but you actually give them happiness. Like Krishna, when he showed compassion to Putana, he removed the inauspiciousness. Then he established, you know, her in a position where she got the position of being the mother. Therefore, one Vaishnava saint says, when Krishna was going back to the spiritual world, he remembered his mother. He remembered for their sacrifice. When he remembered, three mothers came. Yashoda came, Devaki came, and Putana also came. Because he had given them that position. So therefore here, Daya is Karuna, Anukampa, and Daya. But compassion without capacity brings additional disaster. Sometimes we try to be compassionate when we are not having that capacity. Therefore, if you are swimming, it is said that if you know how to swim, but still stay away from people who don't know how to swim, if they are in the water. Why? Because you can only swim, but you can't save. If you are expert swimmer, plus you know the art of saving, then only you can save people. Otherwise, you are swimming so many times, it happens, people are swimming in the vacation in India, a kid jump into the well, and what happens? Because they don't know how to swim properly, and the other party knows how to swim, but they don't know how to save, the people who are drowning, they actually grab them tightly. They hold them tightly, hoping that I will come out. Because psychologically, you are not thinking, you know, if I do this, I will also drown and he will also drown. But the expert person, when somebody catches him, he hits him hard. He causes pain to them and catches their hair and brings them out. So there is a pain caused to their party in giving compassion, because the capacity is there. Therefore, in the Valmiki Ramayana, when Sugriv objected Lord Ram giving shelter to Vibhishan, he said, don't give him, he is a brother of Ravan. Who is saying this? Sugriv is saying. Who is the brother of Vali? He took shelter of Lord Ram. He said, don't trust him, he can't be trusted because he is betraying his own brother. He said, don't do that, don't give him compassion. He's insisting that you should not give. Then Lord Ram told Sugriv, my dear Sugriv, you know, I have the power. If Sugriv does something wrong, with a thumb, I can destroy the entire creation. So when Ram is giving compassion, the Lord has the power to take millions of living entities along with him, and he can't drown. But when we try to do, imitate someone is extremely powerful, but without capacity, what does it do? It causes pain. Therefore, Daya, when it is connected with sentiments, it only causes pain. But when Daya is connected to Dharma, that gives rise to Abhay, fearlessness. So therefore, you know, Prabhupada gives this example of feeding fried food to one of your brother or sister when they are sick, fried out eating ordinary food. Mother is giving them diet. So that compassion only causes pain to the child. And Abhay, basically, like when we chant Narsing Arthi, we don't chant Narsing Arthi to overcome problem, but we chant Narsing Arthi to face problem. They are two different things. Because problem will come in this world. Dharma Daya is Ram's example. And similarly, what Guru does, Guru makes us fearless. Yesterday we were discussing that many times we use Guru as a drug instead of nectar. When we become dependent on the physical association of the spiritual master, I remember reading one story, somebody after the departure of Prabhupada, somebody came and he gave his sannyas danda to GBC. He said, now I cannot practice because Prabhupada is not there. So he was accustomed to physical association. He did not grow beyond that. Right. So therefore, the nature of Guru, what does he do? Like somebody asked Prabhupada, I wanted to stay at your lotus feet. He said, my feet are always moving. They don't stay in one place. Therefore, we see when people become addicted to taking medicine for some problem, the problem persists and another problem comes. What is that? We become addicted to taking that medicine. But Guru is like Amrit. He's like nectar. He gives us the facility to become fearless to face the world in such a way that we grow in life. And the next quality of dharma, married to dharma, is shanti, peace. Right. Now peace without dharma You know, we see when you talk about shanti, 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 shanti is connected to non-violence also in one sense. And Prabhupada writes, for a warrior, non-violence on the battlefield is the foolish proposition. Why? Because when Krishna came to Hastinapur, can you imagine Krishna is asking only for 5 villages from Duryodhana? How much? 5 villages. He said, you take the entire kingdom and only give 5 villages to the Pandavas. Why? Because they are accustomed to rule. They are Kshatriyas. And can you imagine, before that, Dhritarashtra sent a messenger to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Just imagine, when you play all the time Shanti, Shanti, other party can exploit you. Now imagine, Dhritarashtra was not weak. Dhritarashtra was not victim. Dhritarashtra was wicked. He was more wicked than Duryodhana. He could use his blindness to always play victim game. And if you study what Dhritarashtra told Sanjay, he told, you go and give this message to the Pandavas. And the message of Dhritarashtra was, he said, my dear Pandavas, you are accustomed to begging. You are born in the forest. You begged many times. But this war will not benefit you and my sons also. Therefore, you continue to beg. Don't attack us. And don't beg in Hastinapur, because if you beg in Hastinapur, the people will criticize me. Better you beg in Dwaraka and stop this war. Can you imagine how shameless and how cruel Dhritarashtra is? In the name of avoiding the war, he is giving such a solution to the Pandavas. And I think one Vaishnav says, maybe this was a psychological game played Dhritarashtra on Arjuna, which in one sense, if Krishna was not there, Arjuna would have followed this. On the battlefield, Arjuna said, Krishna, I don't mind living on begging. I will not attack the Kauravas even if they come with all their weapons. I will not attack. I will live on begging. And then it is explained that this emotions of Arjuna was the greatest violence he created. Because what is Arjuna's character, the Kshatriya? He has to give Abhayadan. He has to give protection to other. He has to give Vidyadan as a king. He has to give Annadan. A Kshatriya cannot take charity. A Kshatriya only gives charity. Such Arjuna was accustomed to giving charity. He is telling Krishna boldly, Krishna, I will not fight, I will live on begging. That was the greatest violence Arjuna was causing. What a disease Arjuna had. Right. In the name of peace, he was causing greatest violence. Therefore, you know, that shanti, which is not dharma-centric, it will create great violence. In fact, you know, this is again historically true also. One of the greatest migration happened in the history of India in the name of non-violence. The greatest migration, if you talk to the Punjabis and Sindhis, in 1947, you know, when the partition took place, in the name of causing peace to everybody. I was meeting one 90-year-old Punjabi recently. Very peaceful, very nice person. When he started telling his story, he was 17-year-old when they were in Pakistan, Punjab, that side. Big landlord, huge land. He said, you know what? He said, within no time, for few days, because they are big landlord, you know, they could protect themselves. He said, about 50 members were there in the family. We were eating half a roti for 1 week. We had to give more to our children. And when someone, he was in the health department, his service was transferring all the dead bodies from truck to, you know, dumping it down. He came to this family. He said, everybody lie in this truck. I will cover you with the bed sheet, which is filled with blood. And I will take you to the Rawalpindi airport. They were in Rawalpindi. So when they came to Rawalpindi, he said, I had one set of cloth. Another set was, you know, again, it was again owned by me. My mother also, same thing. We had so much of wealth, so much of land. Everything was left instantly within 7 days. When our flight landed to Lahore, the flight came down. We were supposed to land in Amritsar, but the army brought their flight down. they did checking. Whatever they had, gold, Mangalsutra, whatever they had, that was also taken away. We just came with two bare sets of clothes. And he told me a very interesting thing. He said, for you, in South India, you are celebrating your independence. For us, it was uprooting our roots. He said, how can we celebrate that? That all happened because of, in the name of Shanti, it was not dharma-centric. Therefore, it caused so much of pain. So therefore, we see Lord Ram, you know, very beautiful in Ramayana, when he was being coronated, he was peaceful. When he was told by Kaikeyi, he said, he will not be coronated, Bharat will be coronated. With the same equipoised mind, Lord Ram departs to forest. It's a very, very difficult. Therefore, Krishna, very interestingly, it's one of the most fascinating concept, the concept of Nishkam Karma. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one should not be attached to the fruits of one's activities, but only one should work. One may say, how is it possible unless I have an impetus to work for something, how can I do something? If you see, you know, in our childhood we used to play this game called as Sap Seedhi, Snake and Ladder. Now in this Snake and Ladder game, very interesting, such a philosophical game it is. It is basically created based upon Bhagavad Gita's teaching only. Why? Because when you play this snake and ladder, you can vigorously throw the dice. That facility you have. But what number comes, it is not under your control. You can chant 108 Narsingh Arati also. Right? But what comes, you have no control, and whatever number comes, you are supposed to take it. You can't say pass. You are in 96. But unfortunately, there you get 4. When you get 4, usually you are very happy. But when it comes 4, now from 92 to 96, what happens? From 96, you come to 8 directly. But life is not over. What do? You continue to throw the dice. So, when we are attached to the fruits of activities, success gives rise to celebration. And how long? More than what it deserves. We celebrate more than what deserves, and we suffer more than what it deserves. Therefore, Krishna basically is telling, if you want to be really active and hard working, don't be attached to the results, because what you have under your control is what? Work. Action is under your control. Result is always fluctuating. You cannot have any control over the result. Same thing with the farmer also. When farmer plants something, even though he may know all the chart of the nakshatra, what kind of rains will come. Nowadays they also don't know what the people do in the farming industry. Nowadays become an industry. If they plant grapes, hoping what will be the market rate. But that was not the farmers would do. Farmers would see the sky. They would knew, okay, after 6 months, this kind of rains would come. One farmer was telling me, you know, olden days, my grandfather, now my sons doesn't follow that. They only see the market. And accordingly they planned. And then what happens? Because they have not focused on weather, the market doesn't matter. The weather is not supportive to that crop, and everything gets destroyed, and the farmers commit suicide. But if you know the weather condition properly, you can minimize the problem, but you cannot confirm that this is what will happen. You can plan, you can work hard, but you have to depend on the rain. Therefore, Nishkam Karma gives rise to Shanti. And therefore, Krishna, very interestingly, in the previous slide we showed, that Krishna is one who can experience equipoised. He said he has already achieved Paramatma. In the 6th chapter, Krishna explains, Paramatma Samahita, one who can experience that, he has achieved Paramatma. The next is Dharma, when it is married to Tushti. Now, Tushti is satisfaction, Samadhan, contentment. Sama means what? Equanimity. Right, when Tushti, that is Samadhan, is married to Dharma, that gives rise to happiness and ananda, delight. Bhaktim paramaya muda, 11th canto explains. When you practice devotional service, what does it do? It makes you completely full of delight. And very interesting, Duryodhana asked this question to Bhishma Dev. He said it's 12 years are over, 1 year is also incognito over. We need to find out the Kaurava, we need to find out the Pandavas. So can you tell us where could be the Pandavas hiding? Now whom are they asking? They are asking Bhishma. Bhishma loves the Pandavas. You know, he loves them, but in the name of glorifying the Pandavas, he spills out the secret. It's very interesting. You know, Bhishma Dev, in one sense, politically not very astute, very innocent, full of integrity, full of transparency, full of sacrifice. But sometime, you know, Krishna used Bhishma Dev. He didn't realize that Duryodhan is using me. When Duryodhan asked this question, where do I find the Pandavas? Bhishma Dev was so always happy to glorify the Pandavas. He said, you know what? He said, wherever you go to the kingdom, whichever kingdom you go, if you find the fruits, vegetables are very tasty and sweet, you should understand the Pandavas are there. Wherever you go to the place, you find people are happy and satisfied, delighted, you should know Pandavas are living there. And where did they find that? They found in the kingdom of Virata. And that is how the Kurus attacked the Virata's kingdom. The point is, yes, we will see, rather than seeing Bhishma making mistake, we can see how Bhishma is glorifying the Pandava. Therefore, the Bhagavatam explains, Kunti offers this prayer, when there is a glance of Krishna, what do you find? There is a delight everywhere. Therefore, Dharma, when it is married with Tushti, you know, which is Samadhan, then it gives rise to delight and happiness. So we'll stop here and continue the next part tomorrow. Anybody has any questions or comments?